is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Burn them up already. Less than 1% of brackets remain intact as we welcome you into this Friday edition of the Lombardi Line. Stormy Bonantoni with you alongside Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, as well as the Golden Gate and the D, where, by the way, this sports book, Stadium Swim, Detroit Ballroom, popping Galaxy, like crazy.
Galaxy
everything.
Ballroom.
Yeah.
Our marketing director, Brooke Sanchez, she might have jinxed herself last night because she did a bracket, right? And these... She needed only Drake to have a perfect first day.
No
and
she way.
And they were up like 6 with 5 minutes to go. And she said, let's get Drake home for my perfect. She showed her thing on her phone. I go, oh, no.
She jinxed herself.
She jinxed herself. Just be quiet until you do it.
You did that to yourself. You've got to stay quiet. It is impossible, though, especially with some of the upsets that we saw yesterday, which we'll get into in a moment. We do have two games in action, though, right now. Florida Atlantic, a 4.5-point favorite against Northwestern. They're up 2 right now early with about a minute and a half left in the first. And Baylor, a 14.5-point favorite against Colgate. They lead 23-12 total in that game pre-tip, 137.5. In about 45 minutes, it is all basketball all the time right now. I know this is an NFL show and we'll have plenty of NFL news and notes. We'll have Michael Kohler a little bit later on the show, give us the Vikings perspective. We'll talk a lot about these pro days, draft, NFL headlines. But with all of the hoops talk, Tom Casale of Sportsline is going to stop by in 45 minutes, give out some of his best bets. But before we get into some of the games today, it's hard to get past what happened to Kentucky basketball yesterday. Down goes Big Blue. Kentucky falls to Oakland. 80-76 is a 13.5-point favorite. Oakland, which many people learned yesterday, by the way,
suburb
is in
of Detroit.
Rochester, Michigan. Yes, there you go.
Darren Banks, you know, your former NHL player, he told me before the game, he said, I bet 100 on Oakland money line. And I thought, well, because Detroit and Windsor, you know, he says, my nephew is a redshirt freshman on the team.
Oh, no way.
He won't play. He goes, but he'll play next year. He said, and so he betted on. I said, Banks, I should have followed.
Nailed it.
Who would have thought?
Unbelievable. Maybe we should have thought based on what we've seen from Kentucky in the tournament the last 4 years.
Yeah, but they got beat by St. Peter's 2 years ago. Like, this team has to be focused that this could happen, right? A 3-14, a 2-15 can happen. I know our friend Mitch Moss, co-host of Follow the Money Head, was deeply invested in Kentucky futures. He was very vocal about it. He just kept adding. His faith never wavered, even when they gave up 90 points in 4 out of 5 games, lost at home to Gonzaga in that head-scratching game. Although Gonzaga looked great yesterday. I didn't want to text him, but I was watching Twitter for his reaction. And his reaction was to retweet the clip of Jay Wright talking about the era of the one and done is over because of NIL and the collection of 18-year-old athletes who play for a year. Now you got kids that are staying for NIL and they're 22 and 23 and 24. And that's what you're going up against the tournament. Experienced, higher basketball IQ, much lower ceiling for an NBA career.
Yeah.
But you're no longer going to be able to have these runs with one and done. So an interesting take, but still, when you have that kind of a size and athletic advantage, I don't know. I watched every possession of the second half, why they were settling for threes and not going to the hole. The worst you're going to do is draw a foul 80% of the time. They wanted to try to match 3 for 3 with Oakland, and they couldn't do it. And I mean, the kid was terrific coming off screens, knocking down all those threes.
Well, that's the thing. And defensively, like, you just leave that guy open. Jake Golke, by the way, his name, a former redshirt from D2 Hillsdale College, coming off the bench in this game, hits 10 threes, 32 points, and they don't defend him until he's hit 7 or 8 of them. So, like, I don't know what you're doing here, but it's just another Kentucky flop in the first round of the tournament. I was going through, listen to this, first 10 years with Cal at Kentucky. 7 Elite Eights, 4 Final Fours, and national championship. Last 4 years, 1 tournament win, no SEC titles, have the number one recruiting class, the most prolific three-point shooting class in the history of the program this season. They lose their first game in the SEC tournament, first game in the NCAA tournament to a 14 seed.
Hey, how about the coach? And I didn't know a lot about this Oakland team, right? I know they play in the Horizon, all this, you know, and I knew they were a Detroit area team. The coach has been there 40 years. Talk about a loyalty of athletic direct program, right? And he said, the interview, I thought post-game was great. He's like, this is our 16th Power 5 win in 40 years, right? But you know he's going to be on Sharp Money today? 4:30 Eastern time. I'm sure Patrick Maher, some connection in Detroit. The coach will be on. It's 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific. I don't think he'll be at Barkan. He's still probably in Pittsburgh, but he'll be Skyping into the show. So look forward to that on VSiN today.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, right?
That's amazing. And I love, too, like when they did the post-game interview with he and Golkey. Yeah. We're not a Cinderella. Yes, yeah. You are. It's okay. It's okay. That's a beautiful thing to be Cinderella, though. But I liked, too, speaking to the NIL comments and everything that Jay Wright said, yeah. Even he, in the press conference after the game, said, listen, like, these guys are going to the NBA. I'm not going to the NBA. Like, he has that self-awareness. But to say, on any given day, we can be better than you and we can compete with you.
Yeah, but that's why we love this, right?
Yeah, that's what makes the tournament beautiful.
Honestly, it was kind of a ho-hum day, right? And then the Kentucky game happened. I know the rally by Dayton was incredible, right? Nevada's up.
Incredible? Or an epic collapse by Nevada, and Nevada pulling just like what you expect from the Mountain West at this point, unfortunately. And you know,
stop saying that. You cannot speak negative things about You got all over me for talking about the Mountain West futility in the tournament a couple years ago.
I love this conference more than anything. But every time I get my hopes up, they just absolutely wreck it. They wreck everything.
The scoring droughts are unreal. They go six, seven minutes without a point. Like, Boise had total control of the Colorado game, right? So I bet every Mountain West team the first. Just because I, a little bit out of anger, but because I thought the seeding was ridiculous. I thought the committee did a really bad job this year. Virginia, why would you put them in?
Agree.
The seeding, how's Auburn a four? And then you put them with UConn. I mean, they have the right attitude. Somebody's got to beat UConn to win it anyhow. But you got to play them in Boston, sure. And you got to play them. But anyhow, I said they're dramatically underseeded. These teams are going to have a chip on their shoulder. And watch it. Go show the committee, right? Colorado State, boom, right out of the gate, destroys Virginia. I thought Boise, with like 7 minutes left to go, had control of that game, and then they don't score, right? And they just keep going down. And Degenhart, he can't get – he had a bad game, couldn't get anything going. And then Nevada yesterday. And Alford's just standing there, right? During this whole – they got scored 22-2 in the last 7 minutes. 22-2.
You have a 17-point lead, and you allow a 17-0 run in 4 minutes. Mm. Like, that's – it's unbelievable.
You can't get to the line. You can't get in the post.
And that was the team that I felt was done the most dirty in terms of seeding among the Mountain West teams.
They were very consistent all year. They won on the road, right? I thought they were very good. Yeah, a 10 was a joke.
So they lose 63-60. Yeah, I thought that they could have been anywhere between a 6 and an 8 seed at one point leading into the Mountain West tournament. They end up being a 10.
But the bettors agree, and they're making these Mountain West teams favorite in these games, right? It's 10s over 7s and 11s over 6s.
Yeah, so it's that was frustrating. Colorado State has the worst first half scoring production I think I've ever seen.
It was 8-2 at the under 16 timeout, and they finished with 11.
Like, how does that happen? First to 10 bettors probably want to kill themselves if they had Colorado State in that spot.
The biggest cheering yesterday outside of Kentucky was actually when Moorhead hit their first three threes, and it was 9-0 because they first to 10, they were all going nuts. Because everybody likes to bet the big dog on the first to 10.
Yep. To wrap up this Mountain West thing real quickly, though, Mountain West, 8 seeds or longer since 2003, an updated number from what Steve Mackinnon had in our guide this week. 4-35 straight up, 6-31-2 against the spread. Just brutal. So Nevada and Colorado State both go down yesterday. New Mexico, San Diego State, and Utah State today. New Mexico, if they win, the 11 seeds sweep in the first round.
And we're not going to talk 12-5 anymore. We'll start talking
about the 11s.
We never hear about 11s, right? I mean, we always talk about the 12s. That's pretty amazing that you could have that kind of a run. And New Mexico's been favored, right? They've taken all the money.
Which I like them. I laid the two with New Mexico today.
Another ridiculous statement by the chairman of the committee. They would have been out if they didn't win the tournament. Mm. Are you kidding me? They should have solidly been in when they win the semifinals. Clemson has not played well.
Let alone beating San Diego State in the championship game, who you put on a 5-line. Sorry.
Clemson has stubbed their toe. They lost 3 in a row. Then they got bounced by Boston College in the ACC tournament. But they had that high net ranking. Remember, Brownell was complaining about how the Big 12 gets this high net ranking. And then they all stay there because they're all playing high net ranked teams. But Clemson stayed in the top 30 and got this 6th seed. Mexico's played very well. I mean, look at UNLV goes and rallies at Princeton and wins that game, and now they get to host a game on Sunday, right? I thought that was another good sign for the Mountain West going in, that they won that game flying all the way across. Do you know that's their first postseason win since 2007 or something like that.
I did not know that.
That's shocking. Chet Buchanan but was talking about it. That on the radio. That's shocking. Yeah. They had that run. They went to the Sweet 16. They beat Oregon. That's the last time they won a postseason game.
That's great. Speaking of which, so Oregon, as an 11 seed yesterday, they beat South Carolina.
They played very, very well.
NC State beats Texas Tech, and Duquesne holds off BYU. BYU took money yesterday. They were a 9.5, 10-point favorite. They end up losing outright to Duquesne. This was a good stat from our buddy Chris Felica, who's come on the show a number of times, a great friend of Reason. In the last 15 years, where there have been 8 11 seeds that have been favored in those games against the 6 seeds, with Oregon's win yesterday, 11s have won and covered as favorites in 7 of 8 of them. So that lends well to this New Mexico line here. We'll see if we can get in there.
Let's get Lobos.
One last thing before we have to hit the break. What do you think of the phantom foul for Samford last night?
Yeah, I mean, from the angle the ref might have been at, you know, it can't come down to one play. And if they don't call the foul, that's not, they're winning
like
the game.
It did, though, with the way they rallied.
Yeah, but, I mean, Kansas will, what's Kansas, 4-point dog now on Saturday to Gonzaga?
I'm still so mad at Bill Self for the, we're going to be as healthy as we've ever been, only to have your best player unavailable. But, you know, neither here nor there. I was also excited in game yesterday when Long Beach was hanging with Arizona early.
So everybody wants to talk about, and then the AD comes out and says, I was trying to inspire the team by firing
what
Munson.
A joke.
Come on. That's awful. But let's be honest here. Dan Munson, when he took Gonzaga on that run, ran to Minnesota. What if he doesn't make that move to go to Minnesota? Right? They're not the program they are now. But I mean, Mark Few's won 84% of his game, and probably half of them he was been tipsy. Right? I mean, we might never know of Mark Few, Tommy Lloyd, how future would have been different.
You're the best. By the way, my McNeese pick yesterday.
Oof.
That was ugly. You know, but you got to pick some of these dogs, and that was just the
Who
wrong
knew
one.
It was all the 11s.
I bought into Seth Davis. Why'd you lie to me, Seth Davis? We're going to hit the break. We got some pro days to discuss, some NFL news and notes, and then back to college hoops in a bit.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out the new and improved VSiN.com. Our website's got a fresh new look, enhanced navigation, and a mobile-first focus, but all that same great content you are used to, and it is College Hoops NCAA Tournament Central right now. Everything you need to know for each and every game and round of the tournament when it comes to future stats, trends, everything. Make sure you check it out now at vsin.com. A couple games in action. We will update you with those halftime score with those halftimes and beyond as the show goes on today. But even though no Michael Lombardi on a Friday, it's Mike Palm Friday. We still have plenty of NFL to discuss.
Palm Sunday, too, coming up this weekend.
You are on Sunday
Palm,
this week.
Palm. It's a Palm Sunday, the Sunday before Easter.
Beautiful.
Coming up.
Beautiful. Yeah, we'll also have, does Palm have a qualm later on in the show today?
When are we going to get the Palm before the storm?
We still have to figure out conceptually what that segment actually will be. We'll get there, though. It will happen. Best believe. Friday's moving forward. But the NFL draft is just over a month away. So with that, of course, you've got rumors, reports, potential trades ramping up. One team, it's the center of some of those conversations right now. The Arizona Cardinals, because of some comments that Monty Austinfort, their general manager, made on the podium on Wednesday. He said there will be a big neon sign that says open when it comes to potentially trading that number 4 overall pick. Quote, I don't like it blinking. It messes with my eyes, but we're always going to be listening. Do you think that's the right approach for this team considering the holes that they have, or do they need to go get whoever that top player is most saying that it's Marvin Harrison Jr.?
It's interesting because from a betting perspective, like 4 and 5 are where the draft open up to try to figure out where the Cardinals and the Chargers are going to go, right? So if the pick trades hands, obviously that's going to affect the betting markets. A lot of people think Harrison's the best player in the draft, regardless of position, right? And so I'm sure they're going to, if somebody's going to give them 3 1s or something, like 2 1s and a 2 or something, they're going to listen, right? But you're right. They have needs. They certainly have a lot of needs. So, and there's another thing, like we talk about how many years can the Bears trade the number one pick with their fan base? There's another thing with a fan base, right? I mean, you got a 4.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Make a splash, get somebody that's really uber talented that can to make a difference now. So I think everybody's always open for business, right? Yeah. Depending on the offer.
He just, did you see the clip at all of the press conference? He seemed very eager about it. And we know how
neon sign.
Exactly. And we know how eager, I mean, not eager, but extremely active they were in last year's draft. You've got a guy like JJ McCarthy, whose stock is certainly on the rise.
To four? Can he go all the way to four, Stormy?
I don't get it. I don't, but like, that's all that I keep hearing. And he's got his pro day today out there at Michigan. He's going to be the belle of the ball. Everybody's going to watch to see what he can do. I'm very curious to see how this is going to play out. You're seeing like five QBs taken in the top 12 in a lot of these mock drafts.
Michael said six in the first round. Yeah. Remember on the Pressing Three a couple weeks ago.
I said that to him with the expectation that he'd be like, oh, no, these teams are reaching. Yeah. There's no way. No. And he's like, no, it's very possible.
Yeah, six.
That's insane to me. That's insane to me. Marvin Harrison Jr., $2 favorite to go number four overall. The Arizona Cardinals, obviously, in that spot. J.J. McCarthy, plus 330. The next shortest shot on there. 27-1 as a starter at Michigan. He's consistent, knows how to win, smart, all these things. But there are so many questions about him actually throwing the ball.
It's like a game manager in college, though, of a good team. He's like, what? I mean, he really is. Good decision making. Don't turn the ball over. Yeah. Make a few throws. Have a little bit of mobility with your feet. But the passing, all the passes, the arm strength, all that stuff, he fit well into Harbaugh's system. That's great. But how does that translate into the pro offense? I don't know. If in the number six that Michael talked about, do you think the one that knocks it out is Bo Nix will not be a first round pick? I think Penix might be.
So I think the only knock that you really have on Penix is the injuries. Yeah, it's the fact that he's, you know, multiple ACL injuries. And that's a scary thing to invest in a quarterback who is older, right? Like, he's not one of the young, spry Drake Mays coming out of the draft at his age. So I get it. But talent wise, if he's able to produce at the level that he did this past year for Washington, the past 2 years for Washington, like, I think that he's a first round pick. But this McCarthy stuff and just the way that he's risen to be considered that high just blows my mind a little bit.
Like, if Alabama beats them in the Rose Bowl, do they still consider him to be, it's going to be, I mean, 330? He's only plus 330 to go fourth?
Yeah. Vikings a minus 130 favorite for him to get drafted there after what they did.
That makes sense.
That wheel and dealing with the Texans. So, you know, reading the tea leaves there, what's going to happen. We also had Caleb Williams have his pro day earlier this week. I thought some of the comments coming out of Caleb Williams' pro day were interesting. Daniel Jeremiah said it was a salad pro day.
Proof of life.
Proof of life pro day. It's not a show off day. It's just about taking care of business. Lewis Riddick said it wasn't spectacular from a throwing standpoint, but that was intentional and it was very targeted from a standpoint of what he wanted to show, and that his footwork was dialed in and that within structure he could play with poise and those types of things.
Well, that is a question, right? He got to be very free and loose, a lot of turnovers. I mean, Darnold turned the ball over at USC. He came in and turned the ball over a ton too. Some of it's because they're so talented and they can make these broken plays, but some of it's decision making as well. And I think that's a big thing for him. Can he play within a system? Obviously the Bears want to run the football. You're now going to play in a cold weather. I know they had to go to Oregon and Oregon State and Washington State, but now you're going to play in December, in Green Bay, and you're going to play in Chicago. Interesting. If they build the new stadium there, they got to have a dome, I would think, because I think you have to have a dome now to get a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they will want to be obviously going to spend that kind of money. You want to be in a Super Bowl rotation, right? So if they end up building in Arlington Park, they would have a dome, which would make three out of four teams there.
Even everybody was so upset at SoFi because it's the half open. It's like a half a dome, half not. Like, the national championship was there last year and it's raining through and everybody's still all bitter about it. Even though Matthew Stafford said, he's like, it's never rained here, because he was there, a Georgia alum. He was there and he was like, I've never experienced this. But
you know, the A's stadium here will not be a retractable roof.
It won't? It's, I thought,
full,
it was.
Nope. It's a full dome. It's all glass. Okay. So you look out into the city, but it's closed. And when we talked to their owners, we said that, a retractable roof. And he said, you know, all the teams we talked to that put them in, They don't like them. They very rarely use them, like 10 games a year. You're required a certain number. They hate it. So they went with a full dome.
I didn't realize that. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. One last thing on Caleb Williams, because another big question mark about him, even though I say question mark, let's use that term loosely, considering he's minus 3,500 to be the top overall pick this year. It's going to happen. He's going to be a Chicago Bear. I think that the conversation around it potentially being somebody else at this point is silly. But the personality aspect is always the thing that's going to come up with him. And another big takeaway from like the reports that I've seen from talent evaluators and scouts and analysts that have left there from being in person were that he did have really, really good interactions with his teammates, and he didn't have that air of the entitlement that I think a lot of people have made him out to have.
Did you do any of their games while he
not
did?
With him? Mm-mm.
I don't know. I mean, there's
I got a lot of Jackson Dart.
You get it.
And Keaton Slovis.
I like Jackson Dart. Yeah. He's a tough kid.
Yeah, he's doing well.
Run
now
between
in
the tackles. I mean, I think there's a narrative with him, obviously, and he didn't talk when they lost. And then the pictures of him in the, what was it, $10,000, $20,000 a month pad that he's living in. And that, is he tough enough? Is he a leader and all that? Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Are there, I guess I shouldn't answer, but are there certain kids who are 19, 20, 21 years old, when you interview them on the sidelines, you get a sense of projecting their future from the way they handle themselves?
So I think there are some, like, for example, and I don't want to like bash on the guy because he already lost his job this year, but Desmond Ridder is somebody that I heard nothing but such glowing positive reviews about him in terms of his leadership, the way that he acts, the way he carries himself. And then I got on the sideline of one of their games and like the body language was terrible. And I interviewed him that
week. Was that the Navy game where they almost lost? Everywhere yes. you went, you were bringing wreaking havoc on these great seasons.
I went through a phase of being a bad luck charm. Okay. We got it into gear this year. At least the game I did with Drake May in North Carolina this year, it started off a little bit rough, but they got it together and he ended up having a 400 yard game. So it was okay. So I at least got one good Drake May experience. But yeah, Ridder, like that was one example where I was like, I've heard so many wonderful things about him. Luke Fickell is really like shoving him down our throats in terms of like, this is going to be the guy. And he wasn't. And then we see in the NFL that didn't translate. And he had his own fair share of issues outside of just that. But
give Sean King credit. Sean King was one of the first that said he didn't think he, from his body language and watching him on the sidelines, didn't think that he was going to be a good leader in the pros.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. It is. And so Caleb Williams, like the jury's out. I just hate how often we throw around the term generational talent. And we talked about that. We had Bucky Brooks on the program earlier this week. And he's like, how many are we going to have? If it's a generational talent, how many are we going to have?
Every other year.
You'll every have other year. It is. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, generational talent. He's going to be a franchise transformer.
It's been disappointing.
Very much so. Yeah. What do you think of that division this year? Is it the Texans now moving forward?
I like the way their team is built. I think don't sell the Colts short. I think that, you know, the Colts were a couple ball bouncing, Jonathan not wanting to run inside the tackle and go out of bounds. I mean, they really probably should have won that game and won the division. And maybe there's a different narrative, but it's not where we look and say, oh, Jacksonville is going to dominate.
Really?
Jacksonville and the other three.
And they were an odds-on favorite last year before the season started. So, yeah, the Texans are exciting. The Colts, I'm interested to see what it'll be like with Anthony Richardson fully healthy. But you do have comeback player of the year, Joe Flacco, backing you up now. We're going to hit the break back to a little college hoops talk when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings. So don't wait. Download the app now and use our code Lombardi when you sign up. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager right now. And we've just hit the half in Baylor Colgate, another 14-3. Baylor up 54-34. Northwestern currently up on Florida Atlantic as well by 3. We've got one game that is starting in just a little bit, and it is my San Diego State Aztecs taking on the UAB Blazers. This number has bounced around a little bit. It got up as high as 7.5. I'm now seeing 6.5. Where are you guys here at Circa?
I thought 7 the last time I looked at the number, Stormy. Let me pull it up because I'm looking at decisions here. You know, I took, this UAB is pretty good, right? South Florida overshadowed them in conference. South Florida was, a top 25 team really nobody talked about all year.
They were dominant in that semifinal game, too. Dominant.
And, you know, UAB is very good. They were good last year, too. Under the radar, were very good. This is a consistent team. And at the same time, I just think they don't go against teams that defend and rebound like San Diego State. People may be down on the Mountain West because of the results so far, but you just don't. You don't play that kind of a physical game in that league. And I watched the tournament, because I was watching a lot because of Temple, right? I thought it was so strange, the whole scandal. And then once there were eyes on them, they covered every game, until, right? All of a sudden, Temple's trying.
Point shaving. Who? What?
Right. Right. So, and then when they got down to 20 to UAB, my friend who graduated from Temple said, the fix is only in when they play this team. We're kidding, of course. I think over the long haul in this game, San Diego State's just too physical and has played more consistent. Say what you want. They lost the games. That was a deep conference. Wyoming was a decent team, right? Going to Laramie was no. I think in and out, the games they played toughened them to the point where I know it's a little bit of a runaway, but 7 we're at right now in this game, 6.5 I see at DraftKings on that line.
And to your point about the conference, like going into the Mountain West tournament, pretty much every analyst I heard said, you know, 7 teams could win this tournament, right? And you have Utah State, who won the regular season, San Diego State, who went to the national championship last year. And even though they're different this year, a lot of belief, they're one of the best defensive teams in the country. And then it ends up being New Mexico that wins and punches their ticket. So it was a really good conference this year with San Diego State. So I took UAB +7 in this one.
Is that your, how much of that
emotional
is
hedge?
Correct. That's the exact term. How much is your handicap and how much is the emotional hedge?
I think it's a little bit of a combo because obviously, like, I watch San Diego State more than any other team. They're my favorite team. They're my alma mater. But for as good as they are defensively and physically, and like, that's why I really liked them in the tournament against Utah State, because I didn't feel like Utah State had the depth that they could hang with them for, you know, multiple games, multiple days. Second half, I felt like SDSU would pull away, and they did. Against a team like this, I feel like San Diego State is one of those teams that, because of the scoring droughts and lulls that they can go on, even with UAB not being a good defensive team, they just miss wide open shots all the time. These are the guys that miss layups, except for Jaden Ledee. It's really sad and frustrating and has me screaming at a television all the time. They go on droughts for, to what you said yesterday about Nevada, 4 or 5 minutes without a point, without a shot. And so I just feel like UAB can keep it close enough. I do agree from a physicality standpoint that San Diego State has enough that they'll win and they'll get out of the first round and advance to the round of 32. I just don't feel hyper confident that they're going to win by like double digits and have established dominance for the league. I don't think that's what they're going to do today.
How far in your bracket did you have San Diego State going? More than this game?
No. Yeah, that side of the bracket is so tough.
Yeah.
Which brings me to another game today I'm curious your thoughts on. I love Auburn. And you mentioned off the top of the show that that's a team that shouldn't be on a 4 seed. Yep. They're number 4 overall in KenPom, number 5 overall in net. They're really good. And they've got a Yale team that shouldn't have even won the Ivy.
They have however many wins they have, but only one was by single digits. Like 26 out of 27 wins were double digits.
Yes.
And they're, you know, on an S curve, they're 16th best in the country because the one they're the worst 4 to get UConn the overall 1. But they say they don't do that anymore, right? They only protect the 5th best and 6th best teams won't have to play the 1. It's not a true S curve and it's done by region. And so I wrote up yesterday. Now, you don't get a lot of people that wear Auburn stuff in Las Vegas, right? You don't. Yeah. You just don't. So I wrote up the elevator at the D to go to the 12th floor yesterday. It was a family and they all had, you know, couple in their 50s and their child probably around 30 all had Auburn stuff on, and you know, they asked me, are you going to the 12th floor? And they didn't know who I was. Anyhow, I said, what do you think about this seed? They go, well, we got screwed, but whatever, you gotta win 6 no matter where they put you, and we're good enough to win it all. I'm telling you, we're good. And I don't, you know, I think they believe that, and I think they are good enough to win it all. I remember talking to Tim Murray when I was filling in for Sean on his show about which team is the most better than you thought they were going to be in college basketball, the biggest surprise. And I said Auburn. I didn't think this Auburn team was a top 25 team. They're a top 5, top 10 team. They are really good. And they played in the second best conference. I know the SEC 1-3 yesterday.
Yeah.
But that was clearly the second best conference in America.
I'm with you. They're 13.5 point favorite today against Yale, total 140. But that was going to be my follow-up question. Does what transpired yesterday with South Carolina and Kentucky and like these teams going down, does that give you any pause about them today?
I don't, because I think the number bakes into 13-4 more if this was a 215. Now, Yale's a 13, but Yale should have lost to Brown. Brown was up six.
They missed three out of four.
They shouldn't have even won. Brown, that's one of the most epic collapses I've ever seen. By the way, there's, and Clark Kellogg pointed this out at the top of the CBS telecast today, there were five teams that were automatic qualifiers that if they didn't win their conference tournament, they had no shot of getting in.
Right.
Three of them played yesterday, all won.
Yeah.
There's two more today, right? I mean, the runs these teams are on, like
Oregon,
NC State. Right, yeah. So, I mean, I feel like this number should be closer to like 16.5 or 17. Yeah. I have a small play on Auburn today.
I even said, I did like a video for our VSiN social media the other day, and I was like, I hope I'm not eating my words, but I think Auburn could win this by 20. Like, I just think they're that, better.
So. But they win most games by 20. That's the point.
What you said, that stat is so good that 26 of their 27 wins were by double digits.
Playing
this
in
year.
The SEC.
Unbelievable. Any other games that, from the betting perspective, are going to be big decisions for you guys here?
So there's two that have a swing of six figures so far right now. And you know, they could get closer or they could go further apart as well as we get through the day. Clemson, New Mexico is solidly, we need Clemson. We're going to end up needing Clemson. That's very lopsided, the money on that game. And James Madison and Wisconsin.
People love JMU.
They bet this like it's already over. Hoops says that he makes JMU the favorite in this game.
Really?
He came out right away when the bracket came out, and he said he had him a 1.5 favorite. That's pretty strong, right?
Yeah.
Compared to the number. I just feel like...
And that number being 5.5, by the way.
I think Wisconsin, after that Iowa game where they lost at Iowa in double overtime, has really kind of found their rhythm. In the whole deal. I mean, they were able to beat Purdue and they fouled three guys out and were able to beat Purdue in that game. I think they've shown a new offensive life, just like Iowa State. Is this Iowa State team that,
for real?
Right? The run through the Big 12 and is this the offensive team they've become? I mean, because if it is, that's scary, right?
That goes back to my point about the east side of the bracket, though,
it's
brutal. All these conference champions.
And then the Midwest is kind of really soft, right? It's dramatically. They put two Final Four teams. Auburn is a four. Iowa State is the two. And they're like, they're gonna make it as hard as they can for UConn to get out of here.
We haven't had a repeat champion since 07. We don't want one. No. So many people still have UConn coming out of that side of the bracket.
I have them winning it all.
You do?
Okay. Well, in my, you know, I didn't never bet them because of the price. But they are the best team.
Yeah.
Right?
And they are the favorites to win it all. And they're the favorites to win the East at +105. Iowa State, the second shot, +380. Auburn, 4-1. Illinois, 6-1. My Aztecs, 25-1. These big favorites today. UConn lay in, 27? You've got...
The bigger the number, the
Purdue
less,
laying 27.
The less the handle is in these games. Let's be honest, right? The bigger the handle, because people...
You can't even take the dogs.
No.
That's what's so hard. Yeah. What was the one last night where you're just scratching your head? I don't know why I'm blanking on it, but it was
the Tennessee game.
Yes. Yeah. St. Pete's.
They had no shot.
No shot.
No shot.
No shot. And I think that there were some people from a betting standpoint that were like thinking of the St. Pete's team from a couple years ago, like, oh, they're getting that many points. Why not? And it was never in question. They were going to, Tennessee was bound to win by 30. You just knew.
And we talked about Long Beach in the first segment. That game ended up landing on the number on 20, right?
Yes. Which Long Beach, I was so excited for them. And I thought that they were a team that could cover based on the motivation factors and everything, getting so many points. You see them with a near tie game at halftime.
Good. That was good for a half.
Let's go. But unfortunately didn't
happen. And then they were down 24 and you thought, no, there's no shot they're going to cover. And they scratched back for the push on the number.
College basket. They call it madness for a reason. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, Tom Casale of Sportsline will join us, give his thoughts on his favorite games of the day and beyond. We'll be right back.
Yeah. This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're back here on the Lombardi Line. Remember, everybody, it's time now to sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription because we have an awesome deal for only $199. Instead of your typical $240 price, you get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for the entire year. That's our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus links to our March Madness betting hub that's updated every day with picks for every game of the tournament. Remember, use our promo code Lombardi. That'll get you your first year of VSiN Pro access for $199. VSiN.com/subscribe and that code Lombardi. Alongside Mike Palm, Stormy Bonatoni with you. Continuing all college hoops talks as day two of the tournament rolls on. Joining us now via the Progressive guest line is Tom Casale, college basketball and college football analyst over at Sportsline. And you maybe have like my favorite tweet of the last 24 hours with the Kentucky loss yesterday. Got a hunch John Calipari will either need to focus on his health or spend more time with his family soon. That is fantastic, my friend.
Yeah, you have to, after what happened the last couple of years, you know, I don't know where the program is heading. I mean, what are we going to do next year? Cal's going to recruit a bunch of five-star guys, and then what? You know, it's just not working. And personally, I just think all these older coaches within the next 3 or 4 years are going to be gone. The game's changing, the system's changing, and some of them, they're just not reacting well to how it, they don't react to the players don't react to them the way they used to.
Tom, I want to ask you about a game today that you have on your sheet, and it's a little bit against the public because we've seen some public money come in on Charleston to fade Alabama here. Some struggles down the stretch, obviously. Remember, they started off so hot in the SEC and were on top of the conference for a while there, but you like the Tide today.
Yeah, listen, nobody wanted to fade Alabama more than I did. But I think the opportunity is going to be in round two if St. Mary's wins. Here's the problem with the Charleston draw for me. They play the exact same way. Charleston does not drive to the hoop. So if you want to beat Alabama's defense, you drive to the hoop and you draw fouls. They're 217th in two-point percentage defense. They're 320th in opponents' foul shot attempts per game. So that those like Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida, those are the types of teams that have bothered Alabama throughout the year. But if you haven't seen Charleston play, think of BYU. They're just going to stand around the three-point line and shoot, and they're going to play fast with Alabama. They're going to run up and down the court with them. I just hate the matchup. I think if Alabama went into a lab and built a team to play in round one, it would have been Charleston. So I'm going to go with them in round one and then probably go against them in round two if St. Mary's beats Grand Canyon.
Because of everything you just said with these teams that like to play fast, they can score a lot. The total's 173. Any thoughts there?
I would be surprised if Alabama didn't get to 90 in this game. You know, the only problem with a total that high in the tournament is the teams haven't played yet. And they also haven't shot in a neutral court gym, right? You always want to see how teams are going to shoot. BYU, for example, shoots a lot of threes. They didn't shoot well where they were. Oakland had no problem shooting where they in that gym, right? Mm. So that would be the only thing that concerns me with that high of a total is a slow start in that first 10 minutes while people get used to playing in the NCAA tournament.
Another team, Tom, that the public has been all over is James Madison. When the bracket was announced, a classic 12-5 game against Wisconsin. Stormy and I were just talking about Wisconsin finding their rhythm offensively. Really, after that double overtime loss in Iowa City, they've played much better with the run through the Big Ten tournament. You have a play on the total in this game.
I don't play too many totals, but I thought this one opened up low because of the Wisconsin name. I think you hit it on the head. Wisconsin has changed the way they play because their defense is so bad. They can't play that turtle pace anymore because teams are scoring on them at will. So to me, this is going to be important in the first 5 to 10 minutes. I think James Madison can get their pace. Now, if James Madison's hitting shots, I think this game goes way over. Again, you're in a neutral site. These teams haven't played there yet. But if you look at Wisconsin over the last month of the season, you're not seeing the 62-58 games you're used to seeing from the Badgers. They're one of the worst three-point defenses in the country. And James Madison, if you haven't seen them play, is they're a high-end mid-major. They have guards. They have talent. So I think this is going to be a pretty exciting game. I know a lot of people like James Madison. I don't hate taking the 5.5, but I think this game's going to be played in the high 70s. So I went with the over.
People like to dog on Rick Barnes when it comes to tournament time, but Tennessee absolutely torched St. Pete's yesterday. Looking ahead to their game with Texas, you feel comfortable laying the number. What makes you think that they can continue that type of pace?
Well, it opened up 5.5, so I grabbed it early. This is a game, I think it's going to be entertaining. I think it's going to be competitive. But I think at some point, I don't know if Texas's defense is going to be able to hold up against Tennessee. You know, Tennessee goes on those runs in the second half. We saw it against Auburn and teams like that. So this is a game, if you don't want to lay the number, maybe wait for a live play. I'm going to look at that, too. I do think Texas is going to compete with them for a while. But I think this, again, I don't play a lot of totals, but this is another one I might look at the over if you're interested. This game's going to be played in the 70s and the 80s. You know, these SEC teams, forget about what Tennessee's defensive efficiency is. They don't play any defense in the SEC. They're going to go up and down the court. And I think Texas doesn't mind playing that way. Texas has athletes. So I see a good competitive game, but at some point it's just too much Tennessee talent. And the problem with Texas is they're just inconsistent. To be completely honest with you, if Colorado State could have made a shot yesterday, they would have come back in that game. They had a bunch of open shots that they missed. So I just think Texas's defense, worst three-point defense in the Big 12, that's going to hurt them in this matchup.
Tom, I want to further delve into Tennessee here. They played in the second-best conference in the country, and they're out of conference. People thought they played Purdue, they played Kansas, they played North Carolina, Illinois. They have an incredible out-of-conference schedule. How much do you put into past failures of a coach? And I say, you know, the committee put Barnes and Painter in the same region, and, you know, and one of them's going to come out. How much do you put into that? I dismiss it with Barnes because I remember I'm a huge North Carolina Dean Smith guy. What he did at Clemson with talent that was much below the league level and turned those into really physical games and was very competitive, I maybe value him higher despite his lack of March success. How much do you paint in when you're handicapping tournament games, Painter and Barnes's lack of success?
Yeah, it's interesting because the tournament is every year it's its own entity. Remember when Virginia won the tournament? They won a crazy game over Purdue. They should have lost. If Purdue hangs on and wins that game and went into overtime, maybe they win the national championship that year. And we're thinking differently of Matt Painter. Mm-hmm. The thing with Rick Barnes is, people kind of forget this. I know he doesn't live in the Final Four, but he does have two Elite Eight appearances and a Final Four appearance with Texas. So it's not like he's never been there. And I just think every year you have to look at it differently. And that's, to me, the biggest mistake people make with the NCAA tournament. They look at past years. You know, listen, there was a few year period there where Villanova made the Final Four and then was out early. And there was rumblings. I don't know if we have the guy. The guy was Jay Wright. He turned out to be the guy because that year that people were starting to rumble, they won the national championship. So the tournament's kind of tough to have narratives. I mean, I think, to me, it's going to be Purdue and Tennessee in the Elite Eight. That's how I have it. And I think that's the easiest region out of all of them.
And then, so you go from a Purdue team that was bounced in the first round last year to a North Carolina team who I see the jersey hanging behind you right now, didn't even make the tournament a year ago, and now earned one of those number one seeds trying to make a push. They have a favorable area on their side of the bracket as well. You think North Carolina could win it all?
I do. I took them at 30-1 a while back. Listen, they have some warts like a lot of teams. But what I like about them are two things. One, as you mentioned, they didn't make the tournament last year. They have played with a different kind of intensity on the defensive side of the ball all season. So that's one thing. The other thing I like about North Carolina, they can beat you in different ways, similar to teams like Houston and UConn, where they'll run with you. They'll play fast. If you want to slow it down, they'll slow it down. They'll win a game in the 60s. And I think that's very important in the tournament because these teams that play one style like Alabama, if they get St. Mary's, St. Mary's is going to slow them down to a crawl. They're not going to like it. So that's why I like North Carolina. I think they can play different styles.
How concerned are you that the potential Elite Eight matchup is against Arizona in L.A., and how much of a home game that's going to be for the Wildcats if that eventualizes?
I get it, but I'll say this. There's way more North Carolina fans than Arizona fans, and I think L.A. is kind of a transplant city. I don't think it's going to be 90-10. I think it's going to be more about 60-40. So we'll see, but listen, that would be a good matchup. It'd probably go down to the wire. I would lean Carolina because of the defense.
See, that's what I needed to hear as well, because I do have a North Carolina future. So appreciate you, Tom.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll have to have Tom on once again. I'm doing great stuff over there at Sportsline. We're going to hit the break, hour two on VSiN and DraftKings Network, coming up in a moment.